You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Last week, we had a fascinating conversation about Barbie, and we ended that conversation by making a pact, you and I, to also talk about the toys that boys have and what that does to our sense of self as boys and men in the world. And I think we often do not pay attention to the action figures, for example, that we buy our kids or the little ones in the family, if you're an uncle or an older brother, or the ones that you grew up with yourself. Well, I don't know, maybe you're still a child in the age of 40 and you still play with these and they seem to be innocent. You know, it's just a little bit of fun, a bit of escapism. The action figures that you might have, whether it be He-Man, whether it be Power Rangers, whatever it might be, Hulk. But I wonder whether you've often thought through the silent impact that different kinds of toys that boys play with can have on their sense of self, and in particular, our attitudes towards our physical bodies. What kinds of bodies are the kind of bodies that we tend to valorize, that we tend to think is more masculine rather than less masculine, more manly rather than less manly? And I could not have asked for a better person to have this conversation with than, firstly, yourselves, and the lines are open right now, to share your stories, your thoughts, but also our guest this hour, the head of research unit on men and masculinity at UNISA, Professor Kopano Ratele. Kopano, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Eusebius. Good morning. I'm sorry I'm not in the studio, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah, you know, my disappointment is abated by the fact that I assumed wrongly that you had all along going to be on the phone line. Otherwise, I would have been disappointed. You know, one thing there's a collection of essays, and I was desperately trying to find it in my horrible library this morning that's a mess, and I couldn't find it. But there's a black American writer who meditates in a collection on masculinity about action figures. And one of the first things that he had said, and I put it on my Facebook wall last year, I think I tagged you on it, was it's interesting how before we even talk about the design of these toys, even the language already is quite... essentialist is not quite the right word, but designed to draw a distinction between what boys are allowed to play with and girls. I mean, we dare not refer to an action figure as a doll, for example.
And it is a doll, by the way.
Yes.
So, two things. First of all, is the language. The language that reinstates this two-sex model, the sexual dimorphism, is really important for a certain kind of view about the world. So that's the first part about it. But in addition to that, there's another kind of reinstatement. This is the reinstatement, even if you think of Barbie and Ken, for instance, the kind of bodies that the designers put on what is a male doll and a female doll. I'm sure you spoke about this quite a bit. And then you can find it, of course, in other kinds of action figures, like Michelangelo, which I have on my desk in my office. And I do spend a lot of time at certain points just going through toy shops, right from how, you know, a toy store like Toy Kingdom is arranged. From the simple colors itself, but then, of course, the kinds of toys that are meant, that are directed towards boy, male children, and towards girl children.
One unsubtle difference as well is, of course, the range of movements that they can perform. Unless we talk about Ken, for example, with limited movement, these action figures are also deliberately designed, aren't they, to be very, very, very muscular, to be able to do all sorts of things. They have these, like, determined expressions on their little faces. And that, I would imagine, begins to imbue the idea that, you know what, real men are these incredible heroes who can do larger-than-life things.
You know, I mean, the conversation we're having, of course, is precisely also about bodies, and it tends to lead to a certain view about gender. There's still a very powerful notion that masculinity is something that only is invested in male bodies, right? And so, in the production of toys, this view comes comes forth, because what you tend to see then is in producing particular kinds of toys, these action figures, this muscularity of Michelangelo, and you had others, Schwarzenegger or Rambo and so forth. And so in that moment, something quite interesting, but also something that has serious social impact happens. It says this is how men should look. And as your caller was saying then, that it puts a particular kind of pressure on men, young men in particular, but all kinds of men, about the work that you have to do on the bodies. Bodies are objects over which we labor, by the way. Of course, we labor on the body in all kinds of manner, eating, sleeping, yes, and then, of course, dieting and exercising are what we're talking about here.
Mm. 11 minutes after 10, you're listening to Kopano, who's with me for this hour. And I've got a question for you as you listen to this conversation, boys and men and the moms, because you are the ones who go and buy these toys very often. What toys are the ones that you have bought for the little boys in your life? What are the ones that you gifted them over Christmas or for their birthdays? Action figures, do you call them action figures? Do you call them dolls? And if you recall your own childhood, if you're listening as an adult male to this conversation, which were the kind of dolls that you would never have played with? Which were your favorite? Give us a call and share those stories. And then more importantly, I guess, reflecting maybe for the first time, so it might take a bit of time, but reflect for me a little bit on what you think some of these figures, whether it be the action figures that you played with or the way the characters that they are derived from in television series, in films, what that has done to your own relationship with your body and your attitude towards your body. 011-883-0702. Give us a call in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. In fact, before we take a break, the one thought that I had, and it came from this American author, I must do him justice by remembering his name before the end of the show, as he was talking about how, for example, as an effeminate, not quite effeminate, but as a very thin, slim gay man, he found himself when he was at university obsessing about going to gym and getting bigger and bigger. And in part because he wanted to look like one of his heroes from when he was a child and used to be planted in front of the television. And the character that he recalled that he was basically subconsciously modeling himself after as a gym freak is the one that many of you will recall when you hear this sound.
And the masters of the universe. I am Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword and said, "By the power of Grayskull, became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe."
And I hate sort of killing the romance of my childhood, but unsurprisingly, He-Man is loud, the master of the universe, and of course has got these amazeballs balls and body. And we end up, of course, replicating these memes. Let's take a break there, and then we'll talk to Kopano and to you on the other side of this.
CBS Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
You were chuckling there when I was playing that little intro to He-Man. Do you also dig him as much as I did?
I was enjoying what he was saying.
What comes up for you? Because one doesn't want to be killjoys, right? Children are children, toys are toys. I mean, I keep referencing how one of my favorite little parts of Pumla Gola's latest book is when she reflects on learning to let go of the obsession with what it means to be a feminist mom raising a boy. Otherwise, you're going to be policing your own motherhood or parenting every second of the day. And how does one balance that with the reality that nevertheless the choices you make do have a profound influence on what kind of boys you are raising?
The choices you make are profoundly impactful on children. I'm reading a book by Oliver James, by the way. It's mostly around genes and genetics and child maltreatment, and trying to make a case about what he calls responsive parenting. And in one way, yes, you have to balance this responsive parenting about what children need, listen to their needs, the kinds of toys that they might want. But also, I think the most amazing thing about learning from both black and white feminist friends is precisely that you have to do this parenting thing. You have to always balance what the world is trying to do to your children, as well as say, look, the world as it is not what it could be.
Yes.
So here's the thing. Don't, even when you buy in this, you must realize there's a fantasy play here about an action figure or whatever it is, movie that you're watching on Disney Channel or whatever. And the fact that there's the both subtle and overt messages about the kinds of things that boys and girls can do, and you have always to respond to that as well. And so I like, of course, what Pumla is saying about this constant need to balance. And it is only feminists who do this, right? Most of the time,
yes.
This act of balance, because the majority of people really go along with the world as it is.
Yes, that's true. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to the conversation.
Good morning. Are you talking to me, Kevin?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Kapana. It's Kevin from Fathers in Africa. I hope you are.
Hi, Kevin.
Kapana, yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about bodies, about that photographic exhibition that was on at the Goodman Gallery. I think it was Jodie Bieber that took a series of photographs of men looking particularly vulnerable, fat bodies and skinny bodies, and if I'm not mistaken, you might have had a photograph there as well.
It was a
beautiful exhibition. So if anybody's listening, I don't know if it's online, but the photographs might be available online. But it's a stunning exhibition of, it's sort of debunking the myth of the fact that male bodies have BVs, He-Man, and the Arnold Schwarzeneggers of this world.
Mm.
It was a fan. Yeah,
that's beautiful. And what we don't have, Kopano, of course, is range in terms of these different body types being represented in dolls.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just saying this to Kevin when Kevin is saying, every time I look at this picture, and Jody gave all of us quite a sizable portrait of what she did, and of course the Goodman Gallery has shown this, and I'm still have a twinge of embarrassment looking at myself about all the folds in my body. But it's precisely what she was trying to do. She did it with women in Soweto at an earlier point. She was trying to show the range of bodies, and I love that about it. I remember that Justice Cameron at the last moment, and another friend, Buisela Porta, shied away, chickened away because they didn't want to show their bodies. It's because of, again, the pressure that we should look in a particular way. But Eusebius, you know, we should say this, and I know, because I see you on social media and all of that, all of us follow that exercise in itself and wanting a particular kind of body, especially if you reflect on it about why you want this body, is part of allowing a range of models of masculinities. Of course, you also exercise because you want to be healthy, because you feel heavy, the moment you start to realize that, of course, there are pressures to look in a particular way, but I'm not doing it only for that. I want to look beautiful. I want to look healthy. I think we should put that on the table as well.
I suppose it raises an awkward question that maybe is inherently personal rather than has a general answer, which is, what would constitute a healthy attitude toward your current body type? I mean, there are multiple motives why we end up exercising, or even if we don't exercise, secretly desiring to have a different body than the one that we have. And it can be for health reasons, which is not a bad motivation. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of it is also to do, if we are honest, if I'm honest, let me personalize it, has to do with social memes about what the right body type is. I mean, my producer and I were reflecting, for example, how on dating sites for gay men, the four most common words you will find on Grindr, which shocked Megan when I just said that to her, is no fets and femmes.
Ooh.
So, you know, it's very difficult to know what your operating motive is when you go to the gym a lot and you exercise. You may declare the motive to be health, but then the question is, are you going to crop your picture above your mkaba when you don't yet have your six-pack? And, of course, the answer is yes, you will.
Yes, yes.
So do I lose sleep over that, or do I just write it off as, you know what, that's just a well-adjusted social person. It's okay. There is body shaming out there. It is what it is. It's so hard to know what is the right attitude to have towards one's current body.
We're getting personal. Can I just add to that? I mean, it took me a long while to come around, and I've written about this in my book, the 2016 book, about how I came to wear what some people see as a dress in public, right?
I love you in that dress.
Yes, people says, you know, it's easy to wear. It might not be very fashionable here, but in other places it is. And of course, when people start to say, and when people ask my friends, you know, what is he? They're asking him about my sexuality. The point is, it is quite complicated to come to those reasons why you want to look in a particular way, whether it's your body or what you dress. And of course, it could be a combination of pleasure, that the body itself gives you pleasure, such as a toy would give you pleasure, but also at the same time, that of course that you know discourse and language are not private matters.
Yes.
They are social matters. They come to you through social discourse. So at some point you have been influenced by, for instance, traveling to India and finding that, oh, these men are beautiful in their kurtas, and then going to Kenya and finding people wearing again some kind of cloth, and you come back, he says, I like that. And so you are, because you have traveled somewhere, you have been influenced by particular kinds of cultural discourses that might not be the discourses in your village, in your country. If you get to a certain point where you have worked through this and you feel a bit more comfortable, which is the thing you have to do with your children. You have to tell them, like, look, remember, this might be because you've been watching these movies and it is a fantasy that you are fine as you are.
Did you feel odd, self-conscious, the need to explain yourself the first time you donned that outfit here in South Africa?
I can mention my friend, two friends who are friends independently, Lee Zama and Kola Stola. I remember one particular moment I went to a function and I was wearing the dress, and they say, what is wrong with you, my friend? What's wrong with a suit? And I still remember this fact that they, you know, these are enlightened, bright, well-educated people. But somehow, even while they were making a joke, I think there was a bit of a hesitation about their friend coming to I think it must have been a wedding, wearing a dress. I remember it because I have to work through that. That even my friends might feel uncomfortable, but I really enjoy wearing the way I'm dressed. I feel special. I feel all kinds of things. But at that moment, I had to start, you know, working out that you know, do I go with a suit where I feel a little bit restricted in my movements,
yeah,
or do I wear something that's flowy and queer and wonderful that I like?
Do we know whether there's or is there any empirical research about the links between these incredibly unattainable Olympic physiques that action figures have and our attitudes as adult men towards our bodies?
A lot of that work is done, of course, elsewhere, not in South Africa. There are people who are doing this. I think Dawn Foster at UCT students were doing that work a while back. I haven't seen it. This were honors, masters, and PhD students. But in the US, somebody like James Messersmith, who just brought a book, does a lot of that around sports. Yes, there is a lot of work around the pressures, including, by the way, drug use, right? Steroids, for bodybuilders, for all kinds of bodies, come into play precisely because you want this amazing, almost non-human body.
Because I think that's part of the disconnect, why people find it very hard to think critically about the choices that we make as parents, as adults, when we buy toys for our kids, Kopana, is that our own childhoods are distant memories, and sometimes, unless you are in a therapeutic context, it's extremely hard to draw the threads between our own childhood experiences and then attitudes that have become internalized by the time you are 40 or 50.
Absolutely. And once again, to go back to this book I was referring to about Oliver James, which you have to get, listeners have to get this book. A simple point he makes is this, is for higher psychological functions, including whether you like certain things, how you think about certain things, so cognitive sort of stuff and emotional certain stuff, run in families. But it's not because they're genetic. It's because we replay the sorts of things and pains and suffering that we experience as children, and we replay that with our children. So a mother who has had a terrible upbringing from her own mother is likely to pass on certain things without realizing it, about complaining that the daughter or the son is difficult, because she herself, the mother, was saying she's difficult. And so she started saying, thinking of difficulty is some sort of natural thing to this child. But the moment they go into therapy, the moment you introduce to them things like love bombing, spending and thinking and being responsive and being quiet with the children, things start to change. And yes, absolutely. We replay these pains we had as children, including, by the way, buying a lot of toys that you didn't have, right?
Yes.
You buy your child a lot of toys without even thinking about the kinds of things. But what you're replaying there is your own childhood.
Mm. Okay, so I want to know from you, if you listen to this conversation, men, boys, teenagers, do you like your body, your current body? Why not? I would really like to know. Or what body types would you like to have? Let's say you had a magic wand, or you could buy it at Woolies. Which is your idea of the perfect body, a body that you can be proud of? Let's have that conversation. It's a safe space. You can have it with me and Kopana on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And then also do me this favor. Tell us what action figures you played with as a child, and whether you love them, and what it is that you loved about them. Whether these be action figures based on television series, film characters, cartoon strips, which were your favorite ones, and what kind of relationship as a boy did you have towards them? In the meantime,
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
24 minutes before 11, if you've just joined us, we're having two related conversations, one about the dolls and action figures in particular that boys play with, and our attitudes towards our bodies, but also how those tend to be connected. And we're in conversation with Professor Kopana Ratele from UNISA. Charlene, good morning.
Good morning. Is it to me, Charlene?
Yes, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. You see, this, I was when I was pregnant, my son wanted a baby for himself, so I bought him a doll. And then and everybody was telling me, why are you buying him a doll? I mean, he's a boy. You know, then I say, no, he's going to be a father one day. And I must tell you, he's the best father ever. Very nurturing, very caring. And even my grandson, he wants nail polish and lipstick and puts on my heels and runs around. That's him.
That's fabulous. What doll did you buy your son?
I bought him a baby doll with a bottle and a dummy and a nappy. And he just enjoyed that doll.
That's beautiful. Was he teased as a result, or how did you respond to family members trying to put you in your place?
No, when I told them, well, my son's going to be a father one day, and it is my choice.
Yes.
And, you know, and their children also played with dolls when they came there, so, you know, they didn't have anything else to say then. But I must say, my son is the best father ever, and I nurtured him in that way, so...
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Charlene. I really appreciate
that.
That's stunning. Kopana, how common is that in your circle? You've got a lot of men friends who do work on themselves and think through their relationship with their children, not just boys. I wonder whether Charlene's story is exceptional.
Well, it is not exceptional, but it is rare. Yes, I have one that we know, who we talk about fathers every Tuesday night, Kuketo Sachani. And it's beautiful to listen to men reflecting about their own fathering practices.
Yeah.
So watching themselves doing this fathering. And this let me a little slow on this concept. That the moment you start to understand that fathering is a practice, it is a practice that you can be good at, and that you have been shaped by also your own experiences about how to father, something already happens at that moment, rather than just automatic. A woman called Tracy is it Tracy Morrison and Katrina McLeod at Rhodes, wrote a book 2 years ago, I think. And one of the questions they were trying to ask is whether men and women, she was studying Africana couples, about how they decided to have children. And they were surprised, in fact, about how men, but also women, don't, particularly men, this was about men, about how they don't think about the what do you think is something they should be thinking about, how and when and for what reasons to have children. So yes, right from get-go, this idea of thinking about having children is already an indication about a particular kind of thinking about fathering, and so about the sorts of toys or other kinds of activities you do with your children.
Devin, welcome to this conversation. Hello, Devin.
I think so. Hello?
Go ahead, we can hear you.
Oh, lovely. So I was a chubby child growing up and in my teenage years, and I always had a triple chin and really didn't feel good about myself. So I started linking the way that I looked to being adequate enough to have a partner. So in my teenage years, all the girls that I liked would never like me back. They'd always end up with my friends who were taller than me and in much better shape. And when I was 21, when I had my first long-term relationship, I remember a situation where the girl's ex-boyfriend, we had an exchange of words, and he said, "But why would a girl like that ever want to be seen with a guy like you?" And instead of taking it personally, I went home that night and I looked in the mirror and I actually said, "You know what, he's right." And what started at the age of 21 was an obsession with getting into shape. And my self-love was determined by how I looked. So now at the age of 35, I still train twice a day. So I do cardio in the morning and I do weights in the evening. And it's not really for health reasons. It's to, like, I've got a six-pack all year round and I feel good and confident about myself. And at the age of about 22, when I started getting into good shape, it really affected my confidence in my personal life, in my career. So being in good shape had an effect of the value that I perceived that I had in terms of in a relationship.
Kopano?
This is an amazing story, isn't it? And it shows the complexity of it. So in one moment, at this moment, Kevin, I think, is saying that being in good shape then has made him gain confidence. But, you know, one worries, and I don't know about the full story, of course, and that is, you know, what kind of confidence comes from that when it feels like it was quite a painful thing at a certain point because of the way you looked and you were being shamed basically for your body. I mean, this thing you about what you said earlier on, Eusebius, I mean, there's the complex reasons why we train twice a day, for instance, or however many days, and you start to get close to a certain quite damaging, quite dangerous line about the self-love that only comes because you look in a particular way. And of course, women have this all the time, right? That they have to look in a particular way. A certain emphasized femininity, including wearing really uncomfortable shoes. And of course, you start to have this, what is called synthetic happiness, that you start to say, of course, I love these uncomfortable shoes. Of course, I love spending two, however many times you go to gym to look in a particular way.
That's true.
You know, so it's a
you convince yourself that you love the feeling of lactic acid. Devin, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
You can comment on that. I also want to ask you a question with your permission. I wanted to know whether do you love yourself? And if the answer is yes, is that self-love connected to your body?
So just to answer the one gym question, and then I'll get to your question. I often go to the gym, and I sometimes go, what am I doing here again? And so because I feel good about myself, it's not linked to the health aspect. It's just linked to constantly. It's an obsession. It has become an obsession where sometimes I just go, I don't even feel like being here, but I'm just going through the motions.
Yeah.
Self-love for me is probably the biggest journey that I'm on at the moment. Mm. So I grew up with a crippling fear of inadequacy. I had, parents that were very successful, and I felt like I always had very big shoes to fill. And in my family, the feeling was that only when you achieve are you deserving of love. Mm. So at 35, for me, it's reprogramming my mind, because growing up, I thought what I have and what I have to give and what I can give to others determines my self-worth.
Mm.
So for me, value is something that I'm now trying to find in terms of just being who I am and people loving me for me.
Absolutely.
Not because I can do anything for them, or not because I'm in great shape and look good with a shirt on.
Absolutely. But thank you for sharing that, Devin. Much appreciated. We'll take a break. Let me just read a couple of tweets. So many of them. So many beautiful reflections in this conversation on Twitter. Sipo says, I love my body. I just wish I did not have Umkaba. My childhood star was Richie Rich, Eusebius, and currently it is the Iron Man. I still have the child in me. Magdalene says, I teach my four-year-old to eat healthy, to be active, and to love his body. We don't buy action figures, but he learns about them and guns from his school, and that just shows you how stark peer pressure is. And then I found that quote I was trying to find earlier. The collection I was talking about, it's a lovely little collection that's easy to miss if you see it at a second-hand store. If you can't find it, I'll give you my copy or borrow or lend it to you, Copano. It's called What Color Is Your Hoodie? Essays on Black Gay Identity. The gay bit is really superfluous because it really is just about male identity, not even blackness per se as well, although there are some intersectional essays on that. And the author is Jared Neal. I'll read this paragraph and then we'll take a spot break. And this is what he said that had been with me since last year in December when I read it. Quote, when I was a small boy in elementary school, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe was the most popular cartoon among boys. I raced home every day after school to watch timid yet Herculean Prince Adam extend his long heavy sword of power, shout by the power of Grayskull, and magically transform into He-Man, the half-naked blonde bronzed barbarian who defended the planet Eternia from Skeletor and other half-naked barbarians with such blatant homoerotic imagery. Mattel can probably take more than a little credit for captivating an entire generation of gay men, he says in parentheses. He goes on, my mother bought me a new Masters of the Universe action figure each payday. We call them action figures, miniature plastic replicas of superheroes marketed to little boys, and boys love them. Yet the language our culture uses to describe these figures reveals our own anxiety regarding masculinity. They dolls. We know this, yet the cultural fear that boys who play with dolls become sissies demands that we rename them. He-Man was an undeniable stud. He-Man stands 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighs around 225 pounds. Wimpy boys like me could only dream of attaining the physicality and confidence He-Man, a veritable muscle god, possessed. The daily taunts from peers and the sense of self-worth, the ache of fear of fatherlessness and absence I feel even as an adult crippled my sense of self-worth. Like He-Man's alter ego, Prince Adam, I scarcely knew what to do with myself. I needed to become He-Man just as much as he did.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
10 minutes before 11, as we wrap this conversation about the toys we play with as boys, what it does to our sense of self and our relationship to our bodies. Let's take a final call. Reg, good morning and welcome to this conversation.
Morning, Eusebius.
Good morning, sir. Go ahead.
Morning to your guest. I was wondering, I've got two questions. One is our perception not linked to our subconscious or primal understanding of fitness and health and the bodies that they use to model these figurines? Are they not kind of, just used as symbols of health and fitness? And also, when we look at somebody who doesn't fit into that model, do we have to fight something in our subconscious to say that, that person is a human being, a mind, and it doesn't matter what their physical appearance is like and how fit they are. Do we have to fight against something that's happening in our subconscious or in our primal brain that then we need to kind of like almost justify? I'm a skinny guy myself, so I'm not advocating being super buff, but I was wondering whether there's something in our subconscious that kind of
Reg, before Professor Rotella gives a viewpoint, I want to talk to you just on a sort of layperson perspective. I mean, the quote that I just gave before we went to the break, he-man, 6 feet, 2 inches, 225 pounds of muscle, virtually 0% body fat. I mean, if that's modeled after just an idea of what it means to have a healthy body, my God, 99.9% of men on the planet are in trouble. So the action figures do not look like healthy people, do they? They are larger than life, including with, which we haven't got to in this conversation today, including with all sorts of superpowers that ordinary mortals don't have.
Yeah, look, I mean, that I'm just questioning the subconscious and the primal, whether there's something in our subconscious or primal brain that comes from way back in our evolution.
Okay. Kopano?
Well, I'm going to make 3 quick points about this, Reg. Well, first of all, one should say this. A man I love, of course, I always go back to him. I've always gone back to him for all kinds of stuff. It's Frantz Fanon, who grew up in Martinique, went to France and ended up in Algeria for all sorts of reasons. So, and he is the one who made this fact. Of course, the fact was made much earlier by Freud. The unconscious is a fact, right? Mm. Freud discovered the unconscious. So we agreed on that. But the second part is that the subconscious or unconscious, as I would rather say, is a cultural artifact. This is what Fanon was saying. What he means by this is what we think is primal actually comes out of the culture. What you read for us, Eusebius, was precisely this, that both the language in which we talk about masculinity and the symbolization that you referred to of he-man is a cultural thing. And so the culture itself says these are the models of masculinity. And the last part, the last comment is what you just said. 99% of men would be in trouble if this was the case. It is precisely that fact. What is called hegemonic masculinities is really doesn't represent any particular man. It's an idealization. And sometimes this idealization can be very toxic.
And the second question that Reg asked, funny enough, was one of the last two things I wanted to ask you about, and it connects to Devon's journey from being a chubby teenager to going to gym twice a day. I mean, Reg asks a profoundly difficult and interesting and important, both philosophical and psychological question about how central the body is to who we are. And it's not only for men, but for women as well. And I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to be some sort of disembodied brain in a vat. I love my body and my relationship with it. But we do overemphasize the physical body's place in our sense of who we are, I think.
Well, 2 things here. I was reading one of the books that I recommend, highly recommend. It came out in 1995, second edition 2005, Raewyn Cornell, Australian sociologist, quite influential around theories of masculinity, and makes this point. So there's 2 things. There's a kind of biologistic arguments, including issues such as primordial, kind of essentialist way of thinking about the body, that the body is there, genetics are there, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Masculinity is a given. And then there's also the other part, which is a social determinist way of thinking about the body, including social constructionism, by the way. Social constructionism says the body is constructed. The problem with this, which I support, is that then we start to thinking that you basically writing the body out of life, but the body is there. Sometimes the body gives you pleasure, so that one does not have to reject the body. One does not have to to
Well, look, I mean, if your body, if you're dead, then you can't exist. So we need the body as a bare minimum.
About sex. Sex is about the body. How
absolutely.
Can you, you know, think about sex when you don't think about the body. You do things with the body.
But the point is that as your body changes from being a baby, a teenage boy, an adult, getting that macabre that doesn't go away, becoming frail, going bald, you have cancer, maybe you've got diabetes, and you lose one of your legs, the only thing that endures is your psychological identity.
So that's a relationship right there. But by the way, one answer about, you know, the difference between going to gym twice a day or 5 days in a week and just taking a walk, and literature shows this. A 30-minute walk every day, just a walk, a slow walk, is as healthy as anything you can choose. Eating well and doing that. I mean, we know this,
yes.
And the MRC does all the studies. Of course, psychologically, about working through the fact that you have macabre, and perhaps you need to walk. You need to walk because of health, rather than just lifting weights every day. Which is, by the way, if you enjoy that, if you have clear about that you want to enjoy a particular kind of bodies, is not related to the pain you suffered when you were a child or when you were 20.
That's right, yeah. 1 minute, I'm going to give you for the last question. Maybe we can have a fuller conversation about this or with Koketso on his show. We struggle, men and women, but I think men in particular, and again, Devon's call planted this thought in my head, to love ourselves for no reason at all as men, don't we? Because when you're chasing all sorts of markers of what it means to be a man, like having a six-pack, looking like He-Man, the action figure, you have all sorts of conditions for what it means, under what circumstances you can truly love yourself. We seem to struggle, Kopana, to love ourselves for no reason.
You're quite right. This is a subject that I would like to be in the studio with you and Koketso. The idea of loving yourself is both such a simple thing, but such a gargantuan task.
Yes.
To, particularly if you have suffered pain when you were a kid, right? Including because you were supposed to look like you wanted this He-Man that you were not. It is such a hard thing, but this is the only thing really in the end about having this positive self-regard.
Thank you, Kopano, my favorite intellectual crush. Thanks for coming on.
Bye, you see you.
Cheers.